Camille Cusimano loved and lost. She got mad. And then she decided to dance. Listen in as the Sicilian-American travel writer and dance teacher talks with Lori McCandish King, associate producer for the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, about discovering the tango, the dance that changed the course of her life. In Cusimano's memoir, Tango, An Argentine Love Story, Camille tells us how she began dancing tango and explains the sometimes mysterious, often intimidating codicillos or codes of behavior for the dance. A longtime practitioner of Zen meditation, Camille also discusses the surprising similarities between Buddhism and tango. She tells us about living in Buenos Aires and about teaching tango on a California mountaintop and in a Nairobi slum. One of 10 children in a traditional Italian-American family, Camille also gives us a preview of her latest book, Wilderness Begins at Home, Travels with My Big Sicilian Family. Learn more about Camille, tango, and travel at her website, CamilleCusimano.com.
Facing our hands, our cheeks, they almost touch. You shaved today. Oh, I know so much. Heat off your face gives me an anguish blush. How I love this tango. Like
shadow. I'm Lori McCandish King, reporting from San Francisco, California. I'm talking today with Camille Cusimano, author, editor, writing teacher, world traveler. You lived in France and Argentina. And, wait, I'm not finished. Travel writer, accomplished tangoist, tango dancer,
tangueta,
and tango teacher, and cookbook author. Have I missed anything?
No, I think that about covers it.
Let's start out talking tango. What's the name of your tango book? Tell me a little about it.
Okay. Tango, An Argentine Love Story is a memoir, and I love the way one of my publicists described it. Memoir of a woman who loved, lost, got mad, and decided to dance.
Woohoo!
That really sums it up, but of course a lot happened in between love, losing, getting mad, and deciding to dance. It didn't necessarily happen in that order either. Tango sort of interrupted my relationship, but it wasn't the cause. Maybe it was a catalyst for change. After all the tumult of the relationship breaking up, I had a really nice partner, Dan, who is still a good friend. We remained good friends, and I think we both agreed that it had to happen. And I have tango, and the good part is I got to go live in Buenos Aires.
Tango was really transformative for you, wasn't it? It was more than just dance. Tell us a little bit about that.
A friend of mine says tango becomes a way of life. So I had a great job, a senior editor on Via magazine, and I'd been there 15 years maybe when I started dancing. I started with just recreationally dancing, ballroom, swing, Lindy. It was just great relaxation for me. People that I danced with said, oh, you have to try this Argentine tango. And I said, nah, it doesn't look very interesting. That people look like they're in a set for Day of the Living Dead. They look very serious. That's a beginner class. Somehow I said, all right, I'll try it. And I tried it. And I didn't fall in love with it right away. But after 6 months, I don't know what happened, I started planning my life around tango. And then my relationship kind of fell apart. I quit my job so that I could dance tango. And I said, I'm going to live in Buenos Aires and freelance, because I was a travel writer. I was going for 3 months first, and after, I'd say a week, maybe a few days, and it was a real short time, I called the airlines, and I just canceled my return ticket. Yeah, and at that point, I ended up staying almost a year and getting the contract with Steel Press to write the book. Writing the book was almost like the dance itself, writing about everything that happened that led me to leave the country and go live in a foreign country. I didn't know anybody, and to go to these steamy dance halls and embrace strange men, man after man, stranger after stranger, and then have all this joy come up, because you can't not be happy when you're dancing. My father used to say that. My parents loved to dance. So I just got happy and thought, yeah, why not? I cut my losses, and I got into the culture. I danced a lot, but I ate great food. Buenos Aires is known for its Italian culture, so lots of pizza and pasta and the meat. The grass-fed beef is great. Empanadas. I lived on empanadas. I love them. It was cheap. I had a beautiful apartment there. It's a little disorganized country, so I knew I wasn't going to stay forever. But I ended up staying from 2006 through 2010, back and forth a bit, but mostly down there.
One of the things that I really liked about Tango, A Love Story, is that it's about more than tango. It's also about meditation, which you had done quite a bit of. In fact, I think you lived at the Zen Center, didn't you? Okay, well, that's practically a different country, too. You lived in... So you lived in the Zen Center, you were into meditation, and then you, because you were so involved in both meditation and tango, found some really interesting parallels between the two. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a very interesting point, because eventually I found a lot of people drawn to tango also had this Zen Buddhist practice or attitude about them. And there is this strong overlap, because when you dance tango, you don't look your partner in the eye. Unlike many other partner dances, you kind of so close that you can't look them in the eye. The embrace is very close. There's also this surrender of ego, which Zen talks about. There's this demand to be present. You absolutely have to be totally present, whether you're the leader or the follower, especially the follower, which I like the role of the follower, because it's almost like shadow dancing. And a lot of followers, as I do, we close our eyes. So there's this inward feeling about moving with this stranger, or sometimes, you know, after a while you get to know the people. Mm-hmm. But it's very contemplative. You really empty your mind, and you're just focused on the music, the dance. As a follower, I'm focused on the way the music moves my leader, and I go into the zone I call the hover zone. The hover zone is this place where I wait, not very long, but there's always a cue coming from the leader. And I love this place because he, sometimes she, gives me a cue. I follow, and then my movement moves the leader. And there's this back and forth sharing. It's like quantum physics.
One of the things that I like about Tango, An Argentine Love Story, is that you wrote about there were four precepts of tango, and I'm going to read them in case you don't remember. One was show up. Two is accept what's ever offered. Three is remain present. And four is be kind and compassionate to yourself and others.
Very good.
Talk about those a little bit.
Zen has precepts, which I like to think of as guidelines, unlike the Ten Commandments that most of us know in a Christian country. So the precepts are guidelines, like, for example, they don't say do not kill. They'll say a bodhisattva does not kill. So I distilled the precepts down to four things, which emanate from kindness, compassion, and wisdom, which is what Zen, all Buddhism, is big about. I was by myself in this foreign country, and it was a little daunting to go to these big, steamy dance halls, and they have very specific etiquette, which we can talk about later. So I had to show up. You know, I had to push myself out, show up. That's 90% of it. And then accept what's offered. Some of my peers in tango didn't like that when I said take what's offered, because sometimes you have to dance with people who aren't as much fun as others. I still try to do that. I would phrase it this way now. Accept from what's offered. So you don't have to accept bad, painful things, but you can accept from what's offered. You can say no, but you don't have to always be looking beyond what's out there, being unhappy. There's a lot of brooders in tango. They sit and brood, like, why am I not dancing with that person? And so I try to not sit next to the brooders, because it's a real negative down energy. I basically feel happy in tango. And then be kind to self and other. That's real easy for me, because I'm always smiling when I'm dancing. I can't not smile, with very little exception. I'm just happy, and there's this good energy, and most of the people are happy to be there. So it's really easy to be kind. I wouldn't say I'm kind all the time, but usually in the milonga, which is the venue where tango's danced, I feel pretty kind toward everybody. I feel like one big happy family. And then remain present. Well, as I said, when you're dancing, your mind empties. And you could take that off the dance floor, which is what I tried to do.
Tango strikes me as being a very complicated dance. And you said that there's a specific etiquette, too. it all sounds very mysterious to me. Take a little of the mystery away for me. Explain a little bit about the dance itself and the etiquette that surrounds it.
I'm not sure I should take the mystery away, but I'll try. Because actually, I feel very sorry for people who first come. And it's almost like when I first walked into the Zen Center and everybody's wearing black and they're not smiling, they're not frowning, but they're very inward directed. And tango's a lot like that. It's very intimidating. But once you're in the venue and you realize what's going on, it's not. There's this real happy undercurrent. So the mystery is this. The Argentine tango comes from a Latin culture, and it was a very macho. It still is macho, but I'm going to say we've taken the machismo out up here and around the world, because tango is a dance that came up from the grassroots, from the people, from the immigrants to Buenos Aires, who were mostly men. And in fact, a lot of the men danced with men, and some of them danced with each other to seduce the women who, I don't know if it's apocryphal, but urban legend has it that many of the women were in brothels. So they were trying to seduce the prostitutes. And then it evolved. The upper crust discovered tango, and it moved up the socioeconomic ladder. And it's still being refined today. So it went to Paris, it went to Europe. I'm sort of summing this up quickly. It got refined. But it kept some of the códigos, or codes of behavior, as we call them. And I guess the biggest one is the cabeceo. A cabeceo is an eye lock, a nod of the head between the man and the woman, who are the two partners who want to dance with each other. So when you go to a milonga, where tango's danced in Buenos Aires, the women sit in one side, the men sit on the other, and couples sit in another section. And it used to be that the men had to initiate the cabeceo, but now it works both ways. And it works really well, because if you don't want to dance with someone, you don't look them in the eye, and you look away if you see them looking at you. But if you want to, you look and you nod. And then typically, especially in Buenos Aires, you wait for the man to come take your hand and lead you out on the dance floor. And then the next código is that you agree, once you've accepted this dance with this partner, you both agree to dance a tanda, which is three or four like theme songs. You don't talk, you dance, and between each song you can chat, a little charla, chat in Spanish. Do not say thank you, that's another big one, until the last song in the tanda. If you say thank you after the first or second song, your partner will lead you back to your seat. They think you're done. It's a polite way to say, I don't want to finish the tanda with you. So it's kind of funny. There are other things. I can write a book on the... People do write books on the códigos, so I won't go in. Those are the most important ones. It's really quiet at first, and people dance this tanda, and then they sit down. The short piece of music is called a cortina, or curtain. And it means sit down and clear the dance floor. And then you get to do the cabeceo thing all over. It does look a little mysterious. And the first time I went to a milonga by myself, I sat like a block of wood. I was so afraid of the cabeceo. It's like everybody's watching me. Mm-hmm. And then I realized nobody's watching me. And I got into it, and my cabeceo got very aggressive.
Now, you teach tango as well. And in fact, I think I read that you just taught tango on Mount Tam. Is that right? Tell us about that.
We started about 4 years ago, having Tango on the Mountain, Tango on Mount Tam, Mount Tamalpais. I belong to the West Point Inn, which is anyone can join. And two of my co-members, Mark Northcross and his wife, Antoinette DiMeo, who is the chef, thank heavens, mm-hmm. We decided to have this first Tango on the Mountain about 4 years ago. So at the West Point Inn, there's no electricity. It's a very rustic inn. You can stay overnight as a member or non-member, and you sleep in these cabins or in the inn in rooms. There's no electricity or light. The lights are propane.
The lights are propane.
Propane. And there are propane refrigerators, but there's no electricity. So we could not have electrical music. It had to be acoustic, which meant it had to be live. So we get these two well-known musicians in the air, in the tango world. Seth Arsenault, who lives in San Rafael and teaches music and is a beautiful bandoneista. Bandoneon is like an accordion concertina. It's the sine qua non of tango music. And we also get Ville Maho, who is from Finland. So we have to wait for those two musicians to be available. and then we announce it to members of the Inn and Tango people. And a lot of them come and spend the night. First three or four times we did it, half the people who came didn't know any tango. So I just give a quick beginner lesson, which, you know, the Argentines say it takes a lifetime and a half to learn tango. So what you get in 1 hour is the embrace. I teach people how to hug. It's amazing how hard that is.
Yeah.
But they get it. And so it's a lot of fun. So this last time, everybody who came knew how to dance tango, except for the innkeeper, Pat. And we got him hooked.
Ah.
And so he and his wife are now taking lessons.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
You've also taught tango in Nairobi, of all places.
Yeah, that was fascinating. So I went to Nairobi in 2011 because my sister Donna, who works for the UN as a corporate communications or media liaison, was on a mission for about 3 years in Nairobi. And she was about to leave the end of 2011. So I went. So it's a typical thing when you're a tango dancer, you Google Nairobi tango. And you find, aha, there's tango in Nairobi. So I met the group. It was small. Mario Ruger, who runs the group there, invited me to give a lesson. So we had a malanga, and I met all the people. One of the women who came was Juliet Kisilu, who's a Kenyan woman. And she was with a church group who worked helping youth to stay out of trouble. So Nairobi has 95% of the Nairobians live in slums. Mm-hmm. She invited me and Mario to give a lesson, and we did. We gave one lesson in a bombed-out church, but it was really uplifting because the kids loved it, and so I wrote about that. She kept asking me, what do I think about coming back and starting Dance for Peace and getting these kids to learn tango, to learn it well enough to then teach it and make a little income. Mm-hmm. So I finally said, okay, I'll do it. I had to raise a little bit of money. I went on GoFundMe, raised some funds. And the day I hit the button to send to thousands of my contacts, help me raise money to go teach tango in Nairobi, there was a big bombing in Nairobi. It was like minutes later, my sister called and said, did you hear what happened? I said, no. She said, well, Al-Shabaab just bombed the Westgate Mall in Nairobi. And almost 300 people were killed and many, many injured. It was horrible. And I thought, oh, my God, I should not be going. But I did. So it's fast forward. I had hit the send button. People started sending money. I said, okay, Juliet, I'm coming. That was September. By February of 2014, I was on my way. I was there, and people's memory is short. We forgot about the bombing. So I started teaching a class of about 50 kids. I had a partner, Mungai Waweru, who happens to be Kenyan-American, which was a very nice coincidence, and he was a young man. It was really nice to have him because he looked like the people there. And we started teaching 4 or 5 days a week. And I stayed 2 months, got it set up. He stayed for a year. And the people in the States couldn't believe it. We'd send them the videos. The kids were dancing. I say kids. They went from 15 up to 29, mm-hmm. started dancing tango. They're beautiful dancers, and they're still dancing almost 2 years later now. A lot of people don't realize that tango actually has a huge African influence. The blacks in Argentina, who were brought as slaves, were dancing something called the candombe and the kanjengi, and that was some of the earliest tango. So really, I was just bringing tango back to Africa.
So you're working now on a memoir, but it isn't a tango memoir. Tell us about your family and the book you're working on now.
Okay, switch gears. This is pre-tango life. I was born a long time ago at a very young age into a Sicilian-American family. So I'm one of 10 children. I'm number 5 of 10. I love my family. We had a lot of good times. And I think a lot of it was due to my father's very outgoing personality. So I wrote a novel, The Last Cannoli. It was fiction, but it was a very thinly veiled story about my family. Changed all the names, protected the guilty and the innocent. Over the years, I'd write a lot of travel stories that I actually published in different magazines or newspapers about travel stories that happened to be with my family. I published about traveling with my father and my mother. I have a lot of stories about wilderness trips with my brother Chuck. He and I, since about 1994, started going to the Sierra every summer, and it was like we were Laurel and Hardy. Something always would happen with the bears getting our food or our stuff, or me thinking he had fallen off the mountain. I couldn't find him one year. I thought he died. Or we lost the trail and I thought we were going to die. We were throwing our packs down ridges and, you know, it was all the scary. So there was a lot of that wilderness stuff. It's 20 stories and they're all connected by my family and travel. The stories with my sisters are travel stories that almost none of them are wilderness. So I say a wilderness trip with my sisters would be redundant because we are a wilderness unto ourselves. So I write about travel with my sisters, which is another story. So the name of the book, Wilderness Begins at Home.
I love it.
Travels with my big Sicilian family. It overlaps with wild in some ways, except we do everything right, chaotically right. We're not as silly as that author was. Although it was a good book. I did enjoy it. It's also a bit like A Walk in the Woods. Chuck and I are kind of like Robert Redford and Nick Nolte. And then it's a bit like the movie, The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio.
Oh, yes. I love that.
Yes. And they had 10 kids. And I think they had 6 boys and 4 girls. But anyway, it's a big Irish family. The father was the typical Irish drunk.
Yeah.
And my father was actually an alcoholic, although he did get into recovery. So there's a little bit of all these books. And I think it'll be a fun read for a certain audience. Certainly my readers who did like The Last Cannoli. You didn't have to be Italian or Sicilian.
I've been talking with Camille Cusimano, and if you'd like to know more about Camille or her tango classes or her books, you can check them out online at her website.
It's my name, which I will spell Camille, C-A-M-I-L-L-E. Cusimano is C-U-S-U-M-A-N-O.com. CamilleCusimano.com. One word.
Terrific. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Laurie. It was wonderful.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning.
The underbed music in this show, How I Love This Tango, was performed by Cafe Music.
Your heart, a growl from the bass, we're off to a running start. How I love this tango. Under the Southern Cross, nothing wagered is something lost. Your foot slips between mine. I know the bones of your spine. I know the way that you feel when your shin discovers my heel. A little caress, then a kick. Facing our hands, our cheeks, they almost touch. You shaved today. Oh, I know so much. Heat off your face gives me an anguish blush. How I love this tango. Like shadows, dancers pass us by so nearly. The glint off of their skin is all I can see. But no other dancer can satisfy me. How I love this tango. Late nights in empty rooms, daylight always comes too soon. But it's beautiful to see your eyes so clearly. A taxi on the street, we say vamos hotel, señor, por favor. Y cuando estamos entre medio de las sábanas. How I love this tango. Thank you. nights in empty rooms. Daylight always comes too soon, but it's beautiful to see your eyes so clearly. A taxi on the street, we say, vamos hotel, señor, por favor. And when we are finally between the sheets, how I love this tango. How I love this tango. How I love this tango.